Listen, laugh, and learn with Sasha and Ish as they share their experiences, thoughts, and tips to build skills that are not so average and a career that's not so ordinary. This is the Not So Breakfast Show.
All right, welcome to the Not So Breakfast Show today, the podcast for leadership and career development. And today we are continuing from our discussion last week where we talked about what defines your success. And Sasha referenced 5 books. So it's a little bit of a continuation on because you can't just say, hey, let's have a talk about those 5 books and then not have books to talk about. So we're going to talk about those. But Sasha, I feel like we're lucky to have you on the podcast today because you have been aimlessly wandering round and round the aisles of the supermarket.
Oh, the main reason I love doing this podcast is just because I need to listen to the advice that you have to dispense. Because, man, so I left home early today specifically so I could be back on time to honour your gift to me of time and I would be on time. But when I got to the supermarket, people just kept ringing me and I kept taking their calls. That's not their fault, that's my fault. But what it meant was I just wandered the aisles of the supermarket taking calls and not paying attention to what I needed to buy. As a result, I've been at the supermarket for 90 minutes and I got a text from Ish saying, hey, Sasha, are you jumping on to record today? And I went, yes, I am at 3:30, which is hours away. But no, it was in fact 3:30. So, yes, lots of up and down the aisles of the supermarket. I now probably don't have what I need for dinner, but I've made it home and I'm excited to be here with you.
You're going to get a written complaint from Countdown saying, hey, lady, get an office. Stop using our bakery section as your office.
Loitering with no intent to do anything useful. I'll be arrested for that.
Well, you have been doing something useful with your time, which is reading some books that you picked up when you were over in Cambridge, Boston.
Yes, I was in Cambridge, Boston, not Cambridge, Waikato.
That's right. And so you've got 5 books for us to kind of tell us about what you've been learning.
Well, truth be told, I bought about 95 books there, but these are the 6 that I first found when I opened my suitcase. And there's 2 things that I think are fascinating about this. Number one is when you go into a bookshop and you notice the things that you are attracted to, pay attention to that. Pay attention to what you are moving towards because that gives you some insights both into who you are right now in terms of what you like and what resonates with you, but also where it is you are moving towards. So what are you attracted to in the bookshop? So for example, there are books in the bookstore about how to fix your car. And I look at that and I immediately look away. I have no response. I just know it's not a book that I'm interested in.
No.
Other people will go in and go, oh, I've always wondered about that. I'd like to do up an old car. I'd like to save money, not having to go to a mechanic. So just notice what you are interested in. And one of the books that I saw that I loved, and I'm so sorry to start with an expletive, but I'm happy for you to bleep me out because the cover of this book has an incredible lily on it. And the book title says, Buy Yourself the Effing Lilies. And the photo of the lily just interrupts the swear word on the cover.
Yeah.
And I straight away picked it up and looked at it and I thought, I love this idea. And really what this book is about not waiting for someone else to fulfill the desires or the needs that you have, but to set yourself up for some success, give yourself the things that you know you want, whether that's lilies, whether it's that you want to have a really nice breakfast on the weekend. So you make the pancakes for yourself, whether or not you've got someone in your life to share them with. And as I looked at the book, I thought, I love these ideas and I don't need them. So I didn't need to buy the book because for a long time now, I've been doing just that. I've been saying it's no one's responsibility to make me happy other than my own. So what are the things that I want to do?
Well, it's Miley Cyrus's song, right? I can buy myself flowers.
I can buy myself flowers. That's exactly it. That's the thing. So the example, I suppose, is that I saw a book. I'm like, yep, resonate, pick it up, but realize that's not where I am right now. And not in an arrogant kind of, I've moved on from that. It's just there was a season in my life where I realized there were some things missing. I wasn't going to enough theater. I wasn't watching movies that I wanted to watch. And having recognized it, I just started doing that stuff. So that's my first kind of note.
Do you think part of your attraction to the book is, and it's the old cliche, don't judge a book by its cover, but come on, put in the work.
It was a great cover.
Give us a great cover, people.
It's a pretty great cover.
It's so true.
Which kind of leads us really nicely into the first book that I want to introduce you today, and it's called How to Be Perfect.
Ooh, nice.
Interesting. But it's by Michael Schur. And Michael Schur, I might be saying that wrong, he was the creator of The Good Place. So when I first came across The Good Place on television, I just fell instantly mm-hmm. in love with it because it was a smart, humorous, warm, gentle way of exploring all kinds of ethical dilemmas, right? What does it mean to be good? Yep. So the subtitle to this book, How to Be Perfect, is The Correct Answer to Every Moral Question. So let me read you a little bit about the back.
Okay.
The author starts off with easy ethical questions like, should I punch my friend in the face for no reason? And the answer to that is no. But then it goes on to explore much more complex moral issues. So, for example, can I still enjoy great art if it was created by terrible people? So this is a real dilemma that we have these days. So there'll be an artist and we love them and we sing along to their songs, and then it turns out they're a bit of a shithead who beats their wife, and you go, oh, can I still enjoy that song? Or so these are the kind of questions that this tackles. Why bother being good if there's no consequences for being bad? Can I break the rules if the rules are dumb? So I've always been fascinated in those kind of moral conundrums. Yeah. And the way that this is laid out and the way he deals with these things, it's expanding my mind. And I was listening back to what you were saying last week-ish about just wanting to open your worldview, just to make sure that you're not stuck in biases and that you can be relevant to a new generation. And I think lots of the things that are discussed in this, super helpful. I mean, he didn't only write The Good Place. He worked on The Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine,
wow.
Parks and Recreation, Hacks. So, yeah. I mean, the guy's a legend. So, and it's a really, really nice, easy read. So high recommend How to Be Perfect.
Cool. That sounds like a good book. I could put that on my list. Obviously also available as an audio book, probably. Just having a guess.
Yeah, all of these will be available as audios.
Nice. All right, so what have you got for the next one?
Next up, this is by a guy called Bo Seo, and he is a two-time world debating champion.
Oh.
And this book is called Good Arguments. The subtitle is How Debate Teaches Us to Listen and to Be Heard. And I've been thinking so much about in our workplaces how often we talk past each other.
Yeah.
Or how often, and you and I have just discussed this before, how often you go to a meeting and everybody in the meeting is just waiting for the other person to speak so they can have a turn. They've come prepared with their point of view.
Yes.
And I had a discussion with someone the other day who they shared their opinion, and I started to share my opinion back, and they said, oh, no, I didn't want a discussion or a debate. I was just telling you what I think. And I was like, yeah. And now I'm going to tell you what I think.
That's how it works, right?
And they were like, I don't care what you think. I just wanted to tell you what I think. I'm like, oh, interesting. Ooh. That's not a way to collaborate or to work together. So what this guy takes us through, fascinating for him, is that when he arrived in Australia from Korea, he was 8 years old and he spoke no English.
Oh, wow.
And so imagine somebody who's coming into a foreign environment, no language, and you know, he struggled at school, and then he came across debating, and he found that learning how to structure arguments and understand the flaws in what other people are saying, to proactively put up ideas, that this was an incredibly useful life skill. I think much like you and I are so sold on presentation skills being something you have to have and be really good at to advance your career, this guy is saying, being able to take part in a healthy conflict debate and understanding how to do that in a way that still protects your relationships, that's an invaluable skill. And I think our decision-making is improved when everybody knows how to discuss ideas in a really healthy way.
So he's basically learnt the language and now is able to debate and have robust conversations in that language.
And he's the two-time debating world champion. So he's really mastered how to understand what other people are thinking, how to persuade an audience, and recognizing what a good argument is. When is it okay to interrupt? When do you need to shut up?
Yeah.
How do you actively and truly listen?
We'll be right back.
Do you spend too much time planning out and then freaking out about your upcoming presentations? Then the 30-Minute Presenter Program is for you. With our audio-based training program, you can literally learn the art of presenting while walking, driving, or even in the bath. Imagine Sasha and I right there with you. Well, not in the bath, but in your ears, unpacking our 40 years of combined experience in this impactful upskill. Learn to craft messages that matter, engage an audience, and overcome those nerves. So join the 30-Minute Presenter Program. The link is in the show notes. Get started today. I heard a fascinating fact the other day that the world French Scrabble champion doesn't speak French.
Hey!
And so they said, how did you do it? He goes, well, you just learn all the words. So he just didn't know how they all go together. He just knows all of the words and how to spell them. I'm sure that's not going to help you in a debate, but technically it's now learn all the words and then put them into an order that people can understand them.
Well, basically the structure of language is, if you take many languages, there's 26 letters and you put them in a combination and it means something. So he's just learnt all of the permissible combinations of letters in our language. I mean, we say that like it's a simple thing. Yeah, he's just learnt. He's learnt the 75,000 possible letter combinations.
Yeah.
And to be fair to him, some English words actually are just French words that we've incorporated into our language. So, I mean, words like cafe, he's good with, right? He's got that already.
He's got that. Cafe, ménage à toi. He's got it all down.
This one is one from the Harvard Business Review, and it's called Four CEOs. And it's got a whole series of articles on how to be an effective CEO. Now, I've mentioned this one because a whole lot of people don't want to be CEO, who cares? But in the series, there's a bunch of other titles that might be really useful. So I truly recommend going to HBR's 10 must reads. And so I took one to Tiger and it was on high performance. So he said, I'll take that, I'll read it and I'll bring it home at Christmas time. So the topics might be on high performance, on team building, on personal development, on leadership, on financial control. So whatever the topic is, you will get basically the 10 must reads as recommended by the Harvard Business Review on that topic. So they're little short articles that you can dive into.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of the things that can really help us in our careers is when we find someone or some organization that's a really good curator. So rather than you having to go, where can I get the 10 most interesting or useful ideas about being a CEO? You go, I'm going to go to the Harvard Business Review and their 10 must reads. So finding people who can point you in the right direction of other resources, that's really useful. And in some respects, that's what we're doing today. Yeah. We're saying, hey, come to us. I've curated a list of books that may or may not be of interest to you. Go, Grasshopper. And even if you like looked for one of these books and you went, it's not my bag, even the search for them will bring up some other resources that might be useful or interesting.
Yeah.
And clearly for me, I'm going to try and be a CEO one day.
You only have to move one letter, don't you, for you?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm a letter away.
All right, that's some good books so far. Give us another one.
Well, let's just break into the all this nonfiction, which is going to help us lead better lives. I've got a piece of advice for when you go into a bookshop, not like a bullshit warehouse bookshop, but a bookshop that is staffed by book lovers.
That smells like books.
Same thing when you go into a restaurant or if you go into a record store, anywhere where there are people with expertise, same with the library, ask them this question. If you could only recommend one book, what would it be? So when I was in the bookshop in Cambridge, I saw a young woman working, and I said to her, apologies for the interruption, I want to buy a fiction book. So this is a book that's not true. It's a novel. It's a piece of creative writing. Can you recommend, if you could only recommend one book to me, what would it be? And she said, oh, well, I'd want to know what you like and what you're into. I said, fair enough, but I've asked the question wrong. Knowing nothing about me, and perhaps if you could only read one book again, I'm asking you for your favorite book of all time, what would it be? And so she recommended me to Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and this won the Nobel Prize years ago. It's called 100 Years of Solitude. And it's a pretty famous book that I'm reasonably embarrassed to have never read. So I thought I should just get over my embarrassment, like, because everybody who's anybody's read it, and just go, now is my time. This is the universe telling me, read this book. It's been loved by many, many people. Oprah's book club recommended it as well. And here's what someone in the New York Times book review said. 100 Years of Solitude is the first piece of literature since the book of Genesis that should be required reading for the entire human race. So isn't that lovely? That's a lovely recommendation.
Can I ask, though, how long does it take you to read a book like that?
So this book has, it's got small print and it's got 417 pages.
Right.
So I could read.
2 years.
So I could read like 2 or 3 chapters a night, and then right. That means I'd read it in a week.
Yep.
Cool. Or okay. if I had the luxury of time, I could read it. I could get half of it done in maybe 4 hours. So spend a weekend day if I 4 hours, and then I'd do another 4 hours at a later time.
Good to know. Just good to know the pace.
I'm a lazy reader. I read for plot. Yeah. So if there's a long bit and I can tell that it's a description of the mountainside, I don't care. I'm just like, okay, yep, I get it. You're in a place that's got mountains. What happens in the place with mountains? Who says what to whom? Other people love reading. And the mountains were beautiful. I'm like, shut up. Just tell me what happens. I read for plot.
You'll be reading a book one day and it will go, and as we said before, the most important part about the mountain was X. And you'll be going, oh, where was that? Flicking back through the book.
Oh, no, I missed it. Go back.
Okay, hit me with another one.
All right, last two are oldies and goodies. Mm-hmm. And these guys have written lots. They're prolific writers. So this one is Daniel Pink. So most of us know him because he wrote Drive, which was all about understanding what motivates people. So if you were leading teams, leading yourself, trying to sell anybody anything, then Drive was really the template that said, here's what motivates people. It's passion, it's autonomy, it's mastery, it's those things, self-direction. People need to care about something. They need to have internal, external rewards. Yep. That's kind of the premise of Drive. Yay. This one is an earlier one called When. And it is the scientific secrets of perfect timing. And so what it's really talking about is to say, how do you unlock the scientific secrets of when to do stuff? And I think this is right up your alley, Ash, because a bunch of work that you've done on your own sort of personal and professional development is about finding the right place for the activities in your life that set you up for success. And so the kind of things that this book deals with is, how do we make time our ally rather than our enemy? So, you know, that feeling like you're always pushed up against time. You're always at the supermarket and someone's ringing you to tell you that you're late for some appointment you had.
Walking round and round the aisles.
Round and round aimlessly. I don't know if you're familiar with that, right? But this also talks about things like, there's some breaks if you give children in their learning at particular times that helps them increase their test scores. There are some hidden patterns in our day around our nutrition, around our circadian rhythms and our clocks, that if we design our lives around those, we can be more successful. And I think in our modern lives, the challenge for lots of us is the wasted time that we spend commuting, for example.
Yeah.
So at a time in the day when we're actually maybe at our freshest, most creative, most ready to work, some of us are stuck in traffic, and you go, that's just dumb. How can we re-engineer and redesign our lives? And I think that's a useful thing. You know, for us here in New Zealand, we're going into December, well, actually everywhere in the world is going into December.
Just New Zealand. Just New Zealand going in.
Yeah. What I mean is, as we recorded this, we're going into December. And for a lot of people, that's a time of reflection. And I love this idea that we can create ourselves new every day. But also, as we go into the new year, what are some of the ways that we could change up how we roll on a daily basis that actually set us up for better success?
Oh, man, I love that. I love the fact that you kind of highlighted that sometimes we just throw our most productive time away to arguably bad planning, right? So like that commute thing, not only have you wasted an hour of your most productive part of your day if you're a morning person, but you're also arrived at work probably a bit pissed off and, you know, next thing you need is a coffee done to try to settle you from your drive and all that kind of stuff. And suddenly it's like, well, maybe it would have been better to, if you had the luxury, to stay home, do the work and then go in a little bit later.
100%. And if you don't have that luxury, then to the things that you've talked about before, can you listen to a podcast? Mm. Can you do something else with that time? Can you ring people to strengthen and deepen your relationships with them? Can you do car aerobics? I don't know.
No.
No. Okay.
If you're in the past.
Should you punch your friend in the face for no reason? No. Should you do car aerobics? No. But you actually could. You could like squeeze your butt the whole trip into work and or squeeze, I mean, if you're a chick, woman, you could like do all your pelvic floor on the way to work.
Brilliant.
Done. Smashed it. Nailed it. Why not?
Not just
That's
for women.
That's good use of time right there. Oh, this is terrible. Did you read about, we had a situation in Auckland where because we've got terrible roading infrastructure, there was like a big sale on at Westfield, one of our shopping malls, and in the car park, people couldn't get out. So they were in their cars for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And one woman just had to do a little wee-wee.
Oh.
that's my nightmare. That's my worst nightmare.
That's my nightmare as well. Not so much the wee-wee, just being trapped in the car for three hours.
No, me, it's the wee-wee bit. Like, oh. Yeah. Okay, good. Let's edit that out so it doesn't make the final cut.
Probably will, though.
Last book. This one's called Nudge. And this is an oldie, right? And it's by a guy who we can't read the title because there's a sticker over his name. So I'll find it somewhere else. Nope, snooze, you lose. You shouldn't have had the sticker over your name, Richard somebody. He won the Nobel Prize, so good on him. But he wrote it with a guy called Cass Sunstein. And how I know Cass is that he's married to Samantha Power. And when I first went up to Boston in 2019, in that very first week, there was a book launch by Samantha Power, and I went to it. So it was in this little church, and she was just talking about her book. Now, she was Obama's ambassador to the UN. And so what was fascinating about her story is she had been a sports journalist. And she was kind of covering sport and was a very much a male-dominated profession, and she was learning about this stuff, and she was watching a baseball game. And as she was watching the baseball game, off to one side, there was footage of the disaster that was unfolding in Tiananmen Square, where, you know, years and years ago, there was this incident with the Chinese government, and there was this lone protester who was holding up this plastic bag and the tanks were rolling towards him. And she saw that out of the corner of her eye, and she just had this instant conviction that nothing she was doing mattered and counted,
and
that sports journalism was not going to be the best use of her talents and time. And she was instantly kind of attracted to this idea of doing more and doing good in the world. So she's got a remarkable story. She ended up being, as I say, Obama's ambassador to the UN, and she had released this book about how you can do good in the world and the state of the world. Fascinating. Which is all to say that this is a book written by her husband. So there's a power couple if ever you heard it.
Yeah.
Nudge.
Yes.
It's called Nudge, the final edition. And you read it ages ago-ish. So what do you remember about it when it first came out?
I remember the elephant on the cover because I'm a visual. But I also remember that it was something about like little influences or little decisions that kind of like nudge you towards a behavior or a thought process, if I remember it right. Was that what it was?
Yeah, you're so bang on. So here's what Adam Grant says about it. Nudge should be required reading for anyone who aspires to run a country, lead a company, raise a child, or make a choice. So it's really about behavioral science. What do we know about how humans behave, how they choose and how they make decisions. So we have this incorrect view of the world that all day, every day, we're exercising our free will. So here I am going to the supermarket, choosing very deliberately what I'm going to buy because I'm the boss of me.
Yeah.
When all the behavioral science tells us that I'm buying things based on where they are positioned on the shelf. I'm buying them based on my perception of value, and that's influenced by people telling me how much particular things should or shouldn't cost. So what this book is all about is understanding what nudges behavior.
Yeah.
So we can set up not to manipulate people, but to, for ourselves, put environments around us that nudge us towards good behavior. And also if we're looking to influence others, to understand what drives and motivates them. So what are the levers that we can pull, practical concepts and strategies that will help other people be influenced by us? So I'm really excited to read it. I've read bits of it before. I'm going to read the whole thing over the summer.
All right. So maybe next time when you're in a bookshop and you walk in, a real bookshop, not one of those plastic bookshops, a real one, we can smell the books. Figure out what you're attracted to, why you're attracted to it. What do you want to pick up? And then if that is not a book and it is the assistant that is working in the bookshop, maybe you don't need a book. Maybe you need an ankle bracelet. Make better decisions.
You are a terrible person that I love. Seriously, though, not everybody's a reader. But if you are a reader, there's some great places to start for your summer reading. And also, if you're not a reader, where do you get your information from? How are you going to use your summer break to get some fresh information, some fresh thinking? Is it podcasts? Is it movies? Is it films? Let's be deliberate about how we feed our minds over the coming break. And if you're listening to this when there's not a coming break, how are you going to feed your mind tonight? Are you going to mindlessly watch TV? Or is there an opportunity to say, oh, I'd like to learn a bit about how to fix my car? Good, do that.